The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Beyond and hello everyone, my name is Jonathan Dormush and this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show covering all the latest and greatest in the world of PlayStation. Even though we're coming off of a major state of play last week, we have some PlayStation updates, some third-party updates, and some fun stuff to talk about this week. But before we get into it, I do want to remind you all, first of all, thank you to everyone who tuned in to that live state of play. If you didn't, that episode is up now on podcast feeds, it's on YouTube, it went up at a weird time, so if you missed it, we forgive you, but it's up there. You can go listen to it and basically hear Brian Altano shout for 40 minutes about how great Resident Evil 4 Remake looks. But in addition to that, I just want to remind everyone, of course, that was just the beginning of Summer of Gaming. There is so much else happening on IGN for the rest of June, pretty much all the way through June. You can expect live shows, pre and post shows, reveals, deep dive interviews, all the big exciting coverage around all of the new and upcoming games that you are most looking forward to on IGN in the coming week. So please stay tuned for all of that. That includes the Summer Game Fest pre and post show that we're going to be doing, an Xbox and Bethesda pre and post show showcase that we'll also be doing as well. And then whatever else happens in June, because they just like to surprise us. There's a Capcom event next week now. They're just going to keep throwing events at us every day, and we're going to cover them as part of IGN Summer of Gaming. But with that all out of the way, before all those events come, we do have an exciting and fun show to talk about this week. Because of Summer of Gaming, the regular cast that you might expect is off doing many projects, but I am very, very excited to be joined by a few other PlayStation experts this week, the two co-hosts of the PlayStation podcast, The Trophy Room. I'm so thrilled to be joined by Joseph Moran and Kyle Stevenson. Thank you both so much for being here.
Beyond. Happy to be here, Jonathan.
Been waiting Happy years to say this. Beyond, Jonathan.
It's great to have you both here. Joseph, you've been on the show before. Kyle, this is your first time. Very happy to have you. Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Thank you both so much for taking the time to chat PlayStation with us. If you don't know The Trophy Room, it's a wonderful podcast the two of them host. I don't want to give the whole spiel for the show for you guys. So whoever would like to sort of give the rundown of what they can expect from The Trophy Room, please do.
Kyle, you want me to take it away?
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
All right, cool. So The Trophy Room is a PlayStation podcast where me and my best friend Kyle talk about the latest, the greatest in all things PlayStation each and every Thursday. And it's there where you could actually check out also our breakdowns of the Summer Games Fest as well. So again, we are so happy to be here. Me returning and Kyle's first time. This is yet again another thing to check off the bucket list. So happy to be here.
Exactly. Yeah, adding an infinity gem to my gauntlet. I've made it to Podcast Beyond. It's awesome.
Well, I'm really excited to have you both here. I know there's been a few people who wrote into the show and were like, hey, we found The Trophy Room when Joseph was on, and hopefully a few other people. Nice. If you need more PlayStation in your life, because why don't you? Definitely go check it out. I was on a few weeks back, months, I don't know how time works, and it's was a joy. Enigma. Yeah, it is. And it was a joy to be with you both. It's going to get even weirder when they just keep dropping these events on us. But it's a joy to be on and a joy to listen to. So I definitely recommend people go check it out if they haven't already.
Thank you.
But so we're going to jump into all of the PlayStation rumors, the speculation, the biggest stuff of the week. But the one big thing I want to start with is the thing that aired right before the show that I was like, we may have to put aside a lot of time for this. This may be, a big chunk of the show if it's a big reveal. That is, of course, the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 reveal trailer happened. They had been amping this up. This was the June 8th reveal of the game. It was a 2.5-minute trailer. It was just the reveal trailer. I thought we were going to get a deep dive. I thought we were going to, you know, learn a ton more about it. I do have some facts from the press release, but I guess just to start off from it, and then we'll jump into some other PlayStation stuff. Joseph, how did you feel about that reveal? Did it, like, spark anything for you?
A lot of nostalgia, man, because for me, this is a little memory card just at the beginning of the show.
Go for
Modern it. Warfare 2 is the first M-rated game that I legally bought when I was back in high school. So that dates me so far back, and it hurts saying it out loud. And it's really cool that there's a lot of, I guess, Easter eggs or echoes of the original in this game as well. And anybody who's beaten the first game knows that it's going to follow some similar beats that that trilogy went on, maybe more reimagined. And that's what you're really getting here in this trailer. You're getting some cool sneaky kills, like an underwater one where I don't know how that person doesn't know you're swimming right next to them. But other than that, like you're in a boat, you know, the cargo ship mission, you know, a lot of calls to nostalgic scenes of Call of Duty that I grew up loving. And so I'm really excited for the first time in a very long time for Call of Duty, no matter if it's a 2-minute trailer or a 20-minute trailer. This did do something for me.
Well, and, you know, we are in the midst of the summer of gaming bonanza, so I'm sure we'll see a little bit more of it as we go forward. But yeah, I obviously, for those who may be on and off the Call of Duty scale like I have been, I was telling the two before the show, the last one I think I actually played to any sort of extent was the original Modern Warfare 2. So it's funny to be back here and be like, oh, yes, another of the game I played, but different, of course. Just to run it down very quickly for those who are excited, because obviously Call of Duty continues to be one of the biggest things around. It's coming out Friday, October 28th worldwide. It will have a campaign for any of those worrying, obviously, but it will also have special ops, a tactical co-op mode that will advance team building skills, and near endless hours of gameplay available in the world-class multiplayer. This is all from the official press release. Just to mention, shortly after the release of Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 will also be Warzone 2.0. That they didn't give an exact date for that in the press release, but they said with it comes new technology, new features, and new gameplay that work seamlessly together. Throughout, the team has taken a wide range of community feedback to heart with both experiences. In order to fully deliver the state-of-the-art Warzone experience, Warzone 2.0 will feature new Modern Warfare 2 content and systems with brand new progression and inventories. Today's Warzone will continue as a separate experience that will include a continuation of player progression and inventories within that Warzone experience. That was experience several times, I think. with that, Joseph, do you play Warzone much at all, or is it not something?
I used to be big into it, but then jumped off just because the size of this game is outrageously too large, which maybe that is
the download size. Why.
Yeah, the download size it's too darn large, man. It's too much. So for me, I had to just, for the sake of my PlayStation 5 storage, I had to just choose Fortnite or Call of Duty, and Fortnite won because it's like 40 gigs.
Which is, it's amazing that that's a small game these days, but yeah, that's where we're at. Well, yeah, I don't think there was anything too deep to dive into. I know we were sort of anticipating maybe we'll have to dive in further, but Kyle, you like me, we haven't been the biggest Call of Duty players as of late. Did that trailer do anything for you, or are you kind of just like, well, I'll wait to see more, but it's not really on my radar?
Anytime you put Metallica in a trailer, I'm kind of in.
That's fair.
It does look great visually. It's maybe this will be the one that pulls me in. Spoiler alert, probably will not be. but it does look very cool to see it like in today's graphical visual standard that it is now. So yeah, it's cool that it's out. It's cool that it's this year. We'll see. We'll see if you find me on the online battlefield. Probably not.
Well, as you said, this year, October 28th, we are starting to get the fall.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Slate a little bit lined up. We are mm-hmm. getting a sense of what the fall is going to actually look like, because I know a lot of people have been worried about what are the games coming this year, because everything got delayed. But, you know, we're starting to piece things together, and that should be fun. But moving on from there, there was sort of one larger PlayStation topic I wanted to jump into for this week, and it sort of coincides with Bend Studio, for those who didn't see, revealed a new logo. And while that may not be the biggest revelation in the world for many people, it is a very cool logo. I recommend checking it out. It came alongside a PlayStation blog post that dove into sort of the legacy and the history of Bend as a studio, and also teased a little bit about what they're doing for their next unannounced game. So this is a game that we've heard, I believe, Herman Holst has talked about a little bit. I think we've seen like bits and pieces of it here and there. But essentially, they've mentioned, and I'm finding the exact wording, that it'll be an unannounced, that this new game is an unannounced IP. It's building off of the work they did from the open world, you know, systems that were built into Days Gone, but will be a new world. But it will also be one featuring multiplayer. And this is perhaps not the only PlayStation game we've heard about being a multiplayer game. you know, this is something I think we've been hearing more and more about. Excuse me. I'm so excited by it. I can't speak.
Jonathan's dying. I got it.
Take over for me. I'm going down.
I got it.
Anyway, it is, you know, we've been hearing a lot, both unannounced and announced, about PlayStation projects, and I do want to get into it. But I think maybe just to start with Bend working on a new game, you know, this is something that we've known for a little bit while, for a while, is that they're not doing Days Gone 2 or anything like that, that they are continuing on. Kyle, do you have much of a legacy with Bend as a studio? Are you excited for them to see something new? Did you kind of hope for a Days Gone 2 to see them, you know, continue to invest in that world? How do you feel about the trajectory?
Yeah, I love Bend. I think if you look on the Twitter sphere, I'm one of the few champions of Days Gone. I actually really, really dug the first game, or the game. So I'm excited whatever Ben does next. The world that they built for Days Gone is really impressive. And if they're going to take that and put it into their new game, especially when it comes to like the hordes and stuff and what they do with whatever this world is. If that is a part of it, that's going to be pretty damn cool. And like going back in the day, like Siphon Filter is great. Like Uncharted Golden Abyss is fantastic on the Vita. It's a shame that we'll probably never be able to play that on a console again. It's probably stuck there forever. But I'm excited for whatever this Ben thing is. At first, I thought it was maybe Ben gets like the Resistance IP, because I can see like the Chimera as hordes like in this open world or whatever. But when they keep saying new world, I've taken that back in my hype expectations, and it seems like it's just gonna be something brand new, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, they have certainly shown ingenuity to both live in other people's worlds and create their
absolutely
own. So I think there is a possibility for it's still to be very exciting, even if it's not in a world that we know. Joseph, what about you? What are you just the sound of a Ben Studio game building off what they did?
I'm really curious what engine they're using, because for me, it kind of reads, oh, we're still sticking with Unreal, which they were, I believe, the only studio in Sony's camp to go with the Unreal Engine. And one of the issues that they had with the motorcycle was, from what I understand, is Unreal is great with four-wheeled machines, but they actually had to go back to the drawing board when it was just a two-wheeled mechanical vehicle. So to me, I'm thinking this could be their first Unreal 5 game, and that really excites me, because from everything we've seen from the outside, it looks really promising, looks really cool. And I really want to see how they take the horror tech, because I'm with Kyle on this boat where I think Days Gone has so much promise, and I feel like if they just honed in on one thing in particular, that this game would have been something truly something special to the wider audience. And so for me, I'm really taking a look at that horror tech going, oh wow, this is like, that is the thing that I want to see. Kyle, you said it correct, like Chimera, a horde of them.
Yeah.
Oh my god, yes, that looks
horrifying.
absolutely. And they're so good at playing with other people's IP so well that works. But something in my heart of hearts still wants them to go revisit Siphon Filter. I want this to be like how, almost Deathloop-esque, where I'm trying to infiltrate this, this mansion, manor, whatever, facility, and there is someone trying to stop me. And I think that would excite me so much, because you still get that story element that we know and love from PlayStation games, but then you have that spy versus spy. So that's what I'm really excited about. It's the opportunities that Ben has to really stake their name again, going, hey, we're a studio that, just the likes of Naughty Dog, Santa Monica, we can make something truly special, because we know that they can. And so I hope that this is the IP that lands them on the map.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of potential here. I think to both of what you were saying, Joseph, I just wanted the motorcycle story, it's one of my favorite things. My coworker John Ryan told that story on Beyond a few years ago when he went to go visit, of like, they essentially had to hide two of the wheels and like fold them in on the motorcycle to make it work in UE4, which is wild. And it's awesome that they did it, because the bike does control well. Like, it's not a bad
bike. Yeah, it does.
But the fact that they had to do that, you're totally right. I do hope they move to UE5 if that's what they're going to be doing. Just based on everything we've heard of what Unreal Engine 5 can do, what we're seeing it with, to your point, I think the only PlayStation studios we know are Haven is using it for their game. And then I want to say, Pixel Opus might be using it.
Right. Yes.
I think are the only other ones that have been announced, but their games could be years off as well. So like, we have no idea what's going to show first. I think there's so much potential. I think you both totally hit the nail on the head. And like, Kyle, to your point, I do think there's a lot to admire about the work they did in Days Gone. I think I never finished it, and I kind of always wanted to go back. I think for me, it was just like the experience was very drawn out. But once you get to where really the freaker hordes are your main objective, and you're really focusing on that in the open world and getting around, and you feel a little more powered up, it's a really fun loop. Like, they really did have something there. So to both of your points, like, that being in a multiplayer experience too could be so fun and so cool.
Absolutely. I want their next project to be their Ghost of Tsushima. Something where it's just like, oh, damn, this is something we absolutely can't miss.
Yeah. It's something that I really hope could have a lot of potential, probably a few years out. But of course, as I was mentioning, this is also a multiplayer game potential. We don't know the full extent of it. It might just be a multiplayer mode. It could have just multiplayer elements, could even just be stuff as much as like leaderboards and some social elements. Mm. Who knows? Maybe you're just giving people thumbs up like in Death Stranding, but
yeah,
I do love doing it. But this is something that we are, you know, seeing a trend of with PlayStation a lot. And we do know they have 10 live service games planned for by 2026. And just to run down, I don't think I missed anything, but if anything sparks your brains, let me know. But so far of what we know that will either be multiplayer, live service, or socially focused, we have Ben's new project, Haven Studios' first game, Naughty Dog's multiplayer game, whatever Factions 2 has turned into. Insomniac has been hiring for a multiplayer game or experience. Guerrilla has had job listings that implied social systems. They've hired people, I believe, who were on Rainbow Six Siege. So obviously multiplayer experience is built in there. And they, of course, did, you know, Killzone and everything. London Studios' new game will have an online focus to it. There's rumors that there's a Twisted Metal game out there, which you would assume would have multiplayer. Deviation Games, the other studio that PlayStation has a partnership, that studio is built on the DNA of COD Zombies, so presumably they have some ideas for multiplayer there as well. And of course, Bungie, Destiny, and then everything else that they probably make from here. That's a lot.
And I think Firewalk too, right?
Yes.
They have a deal with PlayStation?
You're correct. Yes, them as well. So there is a lot of multiplayer in the works with PlayStation. And I think, you know, there's a couple of things that come up when we have these conversations of like, oh, does that mean we're losing the PlayStation we know? What does that mean for single player games? And I do want to get to that. But I do also think it's worth noting of like, there is a long history of multiplayer to PlayStation. This isn't something that is brand new, but it's something they just kind of strayed away from for a bit of time. And there's an excitement, I think, for them to get back to that if they can put their acumen and skill from the single player games and also do that in a multiplayer space. There's a lot of potential there. But Kyle, I want to start with you just on sort of a like general feeling of PlayStation diving into this amount of a multiplayer suite. Does it excite you? Does it worry you? Are you a typically multiplayer focused player? Do you not think you'll jump into many of these things? Like how are you sitting with the possibility of all this?
Yeah, I'm particularly a single player story focused gamer. So when this first came out with the 10 live service games, whatever, I honestly was a little bit worried because I didn't want them to take resources away from what PlayStation does best and those narrative driven Last of Us Uncharted types of experiences. I've since come back from that and be like, oh, this is okay. They can both live in both worlds. Everything's rosy in PlayStation land.
So you took the chainsaw away from your PlayStation at that point, Kyle, right?
100% did.
The blade was right about to hit onto it, and then
I closed the second story window. I was like, I'm not throwing it out the window.
For those who don't know what we're talking about, your life is probably better off not knowing.
Way better.
Absolutely. But yeah, I think the live service things are exciting. Especially if they can pair them with the single player stuff in the same thing, like Uncharted and what Naughty Dog does, really, with their single player things and their underrated multiplayer modes, which I do dabble in because they are a lot of fun. Like Factions 1, I lost so many hours of that last two summers ago now when I was going for the platinum. It was stellar. I had a great time. So yeah, I'm excited to see what these all are. I wonder if there's going to be enough variety of each one. Or are they all going to be kind of like weaved in and thought about in the same boat? And is that going to kill the player base on one and go to the other? Like, is there going to be enough variety for a constant player base, like day to day?
Yeah,
that's a big question I have too. Joseph, go ahead. I was going to.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think about too, is like, how many of these things are actually going to stick? What's going to be the thing, you know, that keeps people playing Factions, that's going to keep people playing whatever, maybe Twisted Metal, who knows. But like whatever multiplayer game that they're making, what's going to have those people kind of stay there and not wander off somewhere else, especially in the land of your Fortnites and your Call of Duties, these juggernaut titles. It's like, okay, how, what would, you know, a what if, you know, future guerrilla multiplayer game, how does that stack up to what is already becoming a crowded space? Like we're seeing, you know, Halo Infinite, for example, a game that I've sunk well, easily over hundreds of hours at this point on, kind of struggle at this point, kind of trying to pick up that player base again. So that's what I'm kind of, you know, curious as to how PlayStation is going to handle that as well, because, you know, for me, you can't just trap these games on just one ecosystem in terms of multiplayer. It's all about population. And so to me, I kind of think one of the many reasons as to why PlayStation might be going that PC route is maybe putting these games, at least their multiplayer variants, on there so that more people get to play them. Because my worry is I'm a multifaceted gamer. I'll play your single player, you know, Last of Us style games, and then I'll go right back to Fortnite, no problem. To me, that's where I feel like PlayStation's biggest dilemma is going to kind of be from is how do you make, and if any of these games are going to actually stick is a valid question, but I don't think like an overall concern. Like I think we're still going to get our Ghost of Tsushima's. I think we're still going to get our, you know, Last of Us and God of War, but it's a valid question that people are thinking about, that it's PlayStation's job to kind of, you know, get us confident in that they can handle this.
Yeah, we're at a big point where we need to see what those experiences are going to be. And I do have some signs of hope, but yeah, I do think on that note, it is worth saying, you know, in their recent earnings call. And I also do want to say, if anyone, especially audio listeners, heard a bunch of loud noises from me, that's because they're demolishing a building across the street from me. So if that came through, I'm very sorry. No, I think, obviously we're kidding, but no, I think you're totally right. The PC install base instantly opens up the floodgates for these. And you're right. Population is a key goal of multiplayer, because if you can't get that base to be there, it withers. I mean, that's why we see successes on PlayStation Plus, like Fall Guys and Rocket League and stuff like that, is because it instantly opened it up to tens of millions of people.
Yeah.
And I do think PlayStation Plus can be like a secret weapon here. We can talk about that. But yeah, I think for me, you know, to your point, Joseph, about sort of like bouncing between the two, I very much do that as well right now. I play Fortnite daily, do my dailies, do whatever. But I only do that with Fortnite right now. I was doing it with Halo Infinite a bit as well for the beginning of when it first debuted, and I was doing it for a few other games. But it almost becomes like, okay, I do my hour of this game, my hour of this game, I do my other... It almost becomes like a job, and there's only so many things you can play and still make sure you're enjoying, and so you have to like scale down. And
I think that's... sorry to cut you off. And I think that's one of the secret weapons of acquiring Bungie, is like, if there's anybody that kind of knows how to tap into the do your homework vibes, it's Bungie with Destiny. Cause so many of my friends are like out doing the same daily I did 7 times in a row and I'm loving it. And yeah. So I feel like that's where that expertise comes in to play as well.
I do think it's something that, at least for me, it's easy to get reductive really quickly and be like, oh, multiplayer experiences or live service, it's all going to be just sort of what we expect. But I think every game can be different. You know, I do think like, Ghost of Tsushima Legends showed what a really cool multiplayer experience could be. That was a total surprise. Everyone loved it from a studio that doesn't do multiplayer. Like, that's not a thing Sucker Punch really ever does. And they knocked it out of the park. It was an awesome iteration of that game. They kept supporting it with content. It was a really beloved version of what Ghost of Tsushima could be. But it also wasn't a thing where it was, this is the game you're going to play for the next 6 years. They found, like, this was the good shelf life for this game. Whereas something I could see, like, Naughty Dog clearly going all in on whatever Factions has become, that's probably going to be a more long-term play, I would assume. And Kyle, you were saying you've enjoyed your time with the original Factions.
Yeah, so yeah, back in 2020, I wanted to platinum it before Part 2 came out. And part of that trophy list is doing the Factions mode on both sides. And I never played it before until the remaster on PS4. And I loved it because as a single-player gamer mostly, multiplayer was always the thing where I'm not good enough to feel like I'm having a fun time with all these people that play every day.
Yeah.
Factions is so different, where you are doing your own thing and still helping the team. There are other ways to help out the team and help out every single match than having the highest kill count or whatever. Like, it is the perfect blend and feels like it belongs in that Last of Us universe. And it was so much fun. So if all these games, multiplayer modes or multiplayer games, have a different twist on the multiplayer format and they're not all just like shooters, I'd be so down.
Yeah. I was talking with some friends over the weekend. Something I've wanted since Horizon Forbidden West launched is basically just like Monster Hunter, but in Horizon. Like, I just want to be able to go out with three other friends, hunt machines together. Maybe we're competing for like who had the best shots or who, you know, took off the most pieces or whatever. Like, there can be sub goals in there like that. But that could be a multiplayer game, and that could be a multiplayer experience. And it doesn't have to be, I'm logging in every day to play 10 multiplayer matches against 100 people on an island, and I'm seeing what, you know, trying to get first place. They can be a variety of them. I think, like, something, like, whatever Haven is working on, they're really emphasizing social as the thing. They're not saying as much, like, multiplayer. Like, they are saying it is a social experience and sort of creation. I do wonder if that means things like we see with Dreams, where it is about creation there. It's like, you know, empowering the other players you're with. There are all these different ways I think multiplayer can go. But, you know, to your point, Joseph, I do think we're at a point where it's like, we need to see what that is going to be.
Absolutely.
A big question mark.
It is a fear that some people have, like folks like Kyle, who mainly play, you know, single player, of just like, I don't want things to change. I like the way things are, but, you know, as of how the industry has turned, I think having a publisher like PlayStation, and the reason why I'm a PlayStation fan is I feel like they get the core of what the essence of that game should be so right that I have faith in whatever direction that they're pulling in, because they've proved it to me time and time again. So, you know, for me, it's easy to have the fear of like, uh-oh, they're just making a SOCOM game to compete with like a Call of Duty or something, and that's all they're going to make. But you're right. Like, they can make something. I mean, we see it with like Call of the Mountain. Look at a VR game, right? That looks so amazing, so beautiful. And why can't they then just turn it around and make a Monster Hunter world within this universe as well? You know, for Ghost of Tsushima, why can't I have a friend just drop in, you know, somewhere in the wilderness, just pop out and go, hey, I'm here. Let's go, you know, fight some mongrels. Like, there are different ways that these devs are thinking about their approach to multiplayer, that it's not going to be what I think so many fear, where like with like God of War Ascension, where it feels just thrown in. I think with this attempt, it's going to be a lot more thoughtful. And I think, to me, I'm coming in with the expectation of, I do think most of these probably will be popular for a moment and fade in time, but there's going to be one or two that will kind of stand the test of time for the next 5 to 10 years.
Now I'm just thinking of a possible horizon where the hunting grounds are like a leaderboard system, and we're all like going against your friends for the highest score in the hunting grounds, or like the fastest time in the proving in the original game or something like that. That would be so cool. And I keep also thinking about like the experience Death Stranding gave me. Like, yeah, giving a thumbs up is a simple thing, but putting resources in to collectively build roads in that game and build infrastructure to help everyone have an easier time is such a cool, unique take on a multiplayer experience that I would love more of that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, and those are online, socially, you know, connected games, but we're still getting big single player games within them or around them. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I do think, especially, you know, Kyle, I know you were mentioning, as someone who primarily focuses on single player stuff, I go very much in phases where I'm like really into multiplayer for a little while, but then I typically stick to single player. And yeah, I think for me, it's like, there is a way to find a balance between the two. And Joseph, to your point, if they are things these devs are passionate about and creating because they want to, and I think that at the end of the day is going to make the difference. And I do think we're seeing that, at least, like, obviously this is a goal that Sony has, and there's probably a you know, an impetus to push for that. But Naughty Dog didn't, you know, they could have just given up on the work they had been doing for The Last of Us Part 2 for multiplayer. Mm-hmm. But they said, no, we're going to keep going. And it seems to have become so big that it's now been a years-long project that they're really spending a lot of time and hiring systems and economy people for. And that's not a small thing anymore. So clearly the studio cares, or they probably could have just dropped that. I feel like Naughty Dog could say, no, we're going to stick to what we're doing.
Yeah. And I feel like Naughty Dog is that type of dev that has that type of say as well, where they, you know, they're like, hey, you made Uncharted and The Last of Us, and and kind of
you may
kind
have heard that of us.
You may have heard of us, so maybe we get to do a little bit of what we want. And so like so like I think there is so much weight to that statement, Jonathan, of like, they're obviously are passionate about this project that they're making, and I think we have to kind of step away from the notion of just because a studio, we don't know a studio for X thing, doesn't mean that it's going to be a dud or you should be just absolutely nervous. Like, take a look at, you know, Jedi Fallen Order. It is a third person, you know, Souls meets Uncharted-esque game made by the creators of Medal of Honor, the creators of Call of Duty, you know, Respawn, Apex Legends, Titanfall, and they made arguably the best Star Wars game. It totally out of their wheelhouse. So to me, again, I understand why people may be nervous, but, you know, when they actually show off their products, I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised with the output that they're putting out there.
I mean, there was a similar thing like in PlayStation Studios. Guerrilla made Killzone.
Yeah.
And then they made Horizon, which is now the flagpole PlayStation mascot kind of game. So I love that PlayStation allows their studios to kind of be a little bit more creative and make what they truly want to make. And they're not pigeonholed into making a specific thing every single time, because then it just becomes like a factory, like just kind of a warehouse on a production line. Just, all right, let's ship it out. All right, here's the new one, whatever. We're updating a little bit here, a little bit there, but essentially it's the same thing. No, I want new things. Yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah, these studios keep getting to evolve. And if multiplayer is part of that evolution for them, I'm excited to see what they do, because they've shown for decades that they know what they're doing. To that evolution point, Kyle, totally. It's, we on this show talk about it often. I would love nothing more than a new Sly Cooper. Or an Infamous. Yeah. I think that would be great. Do I think Sucker Punch wants to do that right now? No. They want to continue probably investing in the world they just made and spent 5 years developing, and that's okay. That doesn't mean that those franchises can't find homes elsewhere, you know, someday. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things where it's like, we've seen that. We've seen Naughty Dog go from Crash to Jack to Uncharted to The Last of Us. Like, we see these evolutions, these changes, and there have been multiplayer throughout them. You know, whether they've gone away from them in years or tried them out, and they worked but weren't the focus and they went elsewhere. It's also sadly, I think, a reflection of just the reality of the business right now. There is so much money to be made in multiplayer. It is just such a big part of the pie of people and the way they spend their money. And if PlayStation sees that as an opportunity to take their world-class developers and, you know, marry them with projects that can also elevate the business that way, that makes financial sense to do. You know, the video games are at the end of the day a business, but
it's one of those sad realities, you know?
Yeah.
But again, I like 100, you know, raccoons jump into an island to steal one treasure to become the thievious raccoonus. You know,
it writes itself. Sucker Punch, if you're listening, Andrew Goldfarb, if you're listening, call us and we'll make the game happen.
I mean, not to spoil a bit we did on last week's show, but Joe invented a game where Sackboy and Astrobot are two grizzled police buddy cops trying to capture Sly Cooper. Because he's stealing everything. Exactly. I want that kind of game.
Now I'm mad that doesn't exist.
Right?
Exactly. It really is just Lethal Weapon with them.
I would watch that, but it's just the very high-pitched voices, or Sackboy saying nothing. Sackboy doesn't say a word.
Yep.
But no, I think there's a lot of potential here. One I do want to ask you both about, I guess because it's a big potential question, Insomniac, working on multiplayer. They have done some multiplayer before. You know, there were Ratchet and Clank games that had multiplayer. In VR, I think their Magic game, which I'm blanking on the name of, had multiplayer as well. So it's not a totally, you know, unheard of thing for them. But if they're working on a multiplayer game, do you want it to be a Marvel game?
Yes. Absolutely, 100 times yes. Whatever that is. Because I think a few weeks back there was like this beautiful Marvel MMO that could have been, should have been, but never was.
Yeah.
If I get to create my own version of like Iron Man meets Captain America, I'm down on. If they're making like an Ultimate Alliance that could be played on PlayStation type of game, I am 100% down for that. I think we all say it all the time, every time we see, you know, Insomniac, we're just kind of like, why are you guys? You guys are just the best. you just never fail. Like anything they do, I'm just completely on board with. But in my heart of hearts, I would love them to go back to Sunset Overdrive and give us, you know, a remaster, because I would like to play them that game. It's so damn good.
And it feels like a lot of fodder for multiplayer pretty easily into that world. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same engine as well from Spider-Man. It makes sense.
It would be perfect. Kyle, what about you?
I would love a Marvel game for sure, but unlike Joe's unhealthy obsession with Bloodborne, my unhealthy obsession is Resistance. I want that to come back. I mentioned that before with Bend. So if they're making a multiplayer game, I'm hoping it's with the Chimera and either a complete reboot, a 4 or something. I just want to be back into that world and fighting the Chimera. I mean, Insomniac keeps teasing us and putting pictures of the Chimera and tweeting them out every so often. Like, hey, you remember this cool gun? Like, hey, it's pretty cool, right? And I don't know. I just, they lift me up to hopefully not pull me down. Hopefully that keeps rising until we get a new Resistance game.
Jonathan, I get messages from Kyle and it just tweets from Insomniac. And he's like, what does this mean?
Exactly. It's always Why Resistance. Are they doing this to me?
I never want to kill his hope.
I appreciate that. I respect that, even though I do think they're just doing it to torture Kyle at this point.
100%.
I will say Resistance 3 is going to be playable on the new PlayStation Plus. So get everyone everyone out there, go play Resistance 3 to show PlayStation that people still care, and maybe they will. It did have the best box art, but it also was
really
fun. Absolutely
did. It was great.
But yeah, it's one of those things too where I'm like, I totally get why Insomniac has maybe moved on at this point if that's not their interest, especially now they're balancing two Marvel licenses. Presumably there are ideas for a Rift Apart sequel somewhere brewing there to add another major franchise. I can see maybe not, but it is something that, like, I don't know, probably any of the partners that they trust, if someone had a good idea for Resistance, I would give them the time of day to like listen to it. You know, there's enough, I think, understanding of what that franchise is out there, but also enough wiggle room to kind of make it your own if it's a different dev. But yeah, maybe one day. So just for now, everyone go play Resistance 3 when it comes to PlayStation Plus next week.
Do it for me.
It's also just a really good game if you haven't played
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
And you are in a country where you can stream PS3 games, of course, since that's not for everyone. Go play Resistance 3. But yeah, just on the whole, you know, when it comes to this multiplayer endeavor, I do think there is reason to have hope. I totally get everyone's skepticism of, like, what does this mean for the future of what PlayStation is? And Joseph, to your point, I do think not everything is going to be a mainstay success of what PlayStation is going forward. There are going to be experiments. Some are going to fail. I do think one thing that they have a leg up on that I think we've all talked about, though, is the infrastructure that they're getting from Bungie. They've kind of talked about a little bit in some of their earnings calls and things like, yeah, Bungie coming in, we basically learn everything about how to maintain a live service game. And I think that is going to give them such a leg up of, man, just getting the, like, the foundation of how to have those systems running is probably such a, you know, cost sinking thing for most studios. To have those learnings from Bungie already, probably going to save them, you know, months, if not years of time and work.
That's a perfect partner too, because, like, Bungie has gone through the lows. They've learned from their mistakes already, and why not just learn from them while they've made those mistakes and start from where they are now, which is fantastic, and keep going.
Yeah. I would love how that, like, talk would go on through, like, Sony's like, so we're thinking about, like, putting, like, I don't know, like, mystery boxes in the game. And Buddy's like, no, friend, you don't want to go down that rabbit hole. Yeah.
We're going to maybe drop new content in once every, like, 6 months. How does that sound to you guys? Like, yeah, go ahead. Sure, that sounds great. You guys have fun. You're totally right, Kyle. I think, like, the ups and downs that Bungie has been through and to be on such an upswing, you know, I think every new season of Destiny, we get a little bit of people love some of it, people don't love some of it. I'm still waiting to figure out how I jump into Destiny at this point, because from everything I've been told, even by people who love the game, is just don't if you haven't been. because it's so much to jump into. So I do hope there's a jumping on point. I do know some people are like, just go play. You'll eventually get the hang of it. But you know, I do think it's something that they've learned a lot, and they are working on also things like onboarding. Like, Bungie has said publicly, they know that's an issue for some people, so they're working on that. And so I think, yeah, that being into the pipeline of Sony and PlayStation, even if they're continuing to make multiplayer or multi-platform stuff, is just going to help the stuff that does get dedicated for PlayStation. I do think PlayStation Plus will be a good way to leverage that. I really do hope these multiplayer projects, if they're related to single player stuff, aren't like, and now pay another $70 for this thing. I do think, like, that's where it's going to really fall apart is the monetization structure.
That's my only worry, and that's where I think PlayStation will have a little bit of column A and a little column B. Like, my hope is, you know, we saw it with Ghost, where they're just like, hey, here's the standalone for $20. But then also have it where it's like, yeah, this isn't the full game, or buy it for $20, or if you're a premium member, look at this, and you get it here for you, for just because you're a premium member, or giving you more incentives. What I think PlayStation's so good at when it comes to their third-party deals is like those skins you can only get in Fortnite, or the skins you can only get in Apex if you are a PSN member. That's where I think, or an essential member now, that's where I think these games have a tremendous opportunity to get more people in.
When I was on your guys' show, when I was on the Trophy Room, we decided it's the bronze, silver, and platinum.
Yes.
There's no extra essential. Get all these nonsense.
Deluxe.
They missed the objective hardcore. It was right there. It was just right there.
Yeah, man. Anyway, but no, I totally think you're right. I do think there are ways, if they can incentivize the PlayStation base who is subscribing to all that, who's already spending all that money, if they do standalone multiplayer stuff, I think it's got to be in at least the premium tier, if not also the extra, the silver tier. I think they've got to put that stuff in there. I think it needs to be or free skins or, you know, free spend on money to get cosmetics. You know, obviously the cosmetics versus pay to win is going to be a thing. I hope they know at this point not to do pay to win.
I hope so. Diablo Immortal, come on.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be really interesting. I think it's going to, you know, change the way we talk about PlayStation games a lot in the next, even just 2 to 3, but the next 5 to 10 years, because we are going to be talking about things probably on a more consistent basis. It's not going to be, okay, what are the 2 to 3 PlayStation first party games coming out? It's like, what are the weekly, the monthly updates for Factions 2 or for Insomniac's game or for whatever these teams are working on? It's going to really change the pipeline of this stuff, which will be interesting. But we're hopefully close to finding out what one of those things is. Like, Naughty Dog's game has got to be showable at some point soon, right?
Yeah, and I think that will be the true litmus test. Like, if there's a multiplayer, maybe we'll also see that PC release. Maybe we'll see that, you know, tiered version in there somewhere.
Totally. Well, hopefully we get some news on that soon. The Summer of Gaming would be a great place for it, and I really hope it shows up. Of course, we're recording right before the Summer Game Fest show, so any PlayStation announcements we'll be covering next week on Beyond. When do you guys normally record? Will you be recording anything after that show?
People can. So we will be, actually. Right afterwards, we'll be recording our breakdown of the show that you can find on the Trophy Room podcast, so on all podcast feeds, might I add.
Well, hopefully there's some PlayStation news to discuss there, but if not, we'll wait for the next State of Player showcase. Speaking of all these summer events, though, and everything like that, it is worth mentioning the ESA announced in this past week, as Summer of Gaming, Summer Games Fest, all of the summer games things are kicking off, that E3 is returning in 2023. They have said that there will be a digital as well as in-person sort of hybrid plan in place right now. Obviously, who knows what the world looks like in a year from now? Anything could change. We have no idea what it's going to be like. But they plan to do that. We don't know any sort of partnership deals. We don't know what devs or publishers would or will be involved. It's very much a mystery at this point of what E3 would look like next year. And obviously, we've seen the rise of competitors, essentially, to it to a certain degree, and also to companies realizing they don't need to go to a show floor to announce their big games. So, you know, we're in an interesting place, and I do want to talk about PlayStation of it all, but just like for your general feelings, Joseph, I'll start with you on this one.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about the potential return for an E3?
You know, famous words of mine, we'll see, bud. I don't know. I think Jeff has a great opportunity to show not just like consumers, but the people that are planning said events why you maybe need to or should rather go to the Summer Games Fest. I think this is the first year where Jeff has a clear opportunity to show publishers why it's cheaper, more cost effective, and you're going to get way more eyes doing it this way than the old way. And you know, all the stories we've heard about the ESA, I don't know if I have the most confidence in the world that they can come back. But there is something when I hear so many people go, I just, these things are nice. These little, like, you know, 20 minute videos or showcases, they're great and all, but there's something missing about an audience, right? Not having the audience there. You know, there's that type of that fever pitch, that excitement when everybody's in a room. It's the reason why, like, Apple back in like the early 2000s would pack a room filled with Apple developers, because they're going to cheer and get people excited and all that. And there's a bit of marketing behind it, but there's a bit of that nostalgia factor as well, of like just being with your friends that you've met online, whether it's playing whatever game, whether it's recording whatever podcast, and actually meeting them and meeting your heroes. That could be like the developers, like my good friend of me, Luke Lore, he loves Crackdown 3, and he actually got to meet the devs and actually say how much he appreciates them for all their work, you know, tackling this game. And that's a big dopamine hit for fans, but it's also a big dopamine hit for the people that are making this stuff. So I think there's an opportunity for Jeff to again, show publishers why it's more cost effective. But I think next year is going to be really telling of what lessons the ESA has actually learned, if they're able to. But also, what are some things that Jeff is and his crew over at Summer Game Fest, not to just put it on one person, that they're able to do? Maybe put their own events in person, in-house, there. So to me, it's really questionable for many reasons, but I can understand why maybe the ESA can come back.
Yeah, it's definitely a big open question. And Kyle, how are you feeling about it for the potential of it?
Yeah, I mean, E3 is always going to have a special place in my heart of a very exciting time of the summer, and just as a gaming fan, you know, taking off work or running home from school and the whole weekend set watching the showcases and just then watching all the live reacts and whatnot. It's exciting. It's fun. We are getting that a little bit now though, with Summer Game Fest. So that part is, I think, being taken care of. The thing that is missing, and I think this year we're going to get a little bit of a different take on it, because I believe some people are lucky enough to go down to play some of the stuff that are part of the Summer Game Fest, is the part of the E3 where I hear people talking about playing the actual games there and tuning into IGN and hearing their coverage of what they played already. So like that kind of stuff is exciting, just as exciting than watching the new trailers or whatnot. So if they can nail that magic again, and enough of the publishers and developers do decide to go back to that, I'm all for it coming back, but I just don't know if they ever will. It's like it's like too perfect now, almost, with all the at-home video showcases. They're perfect.
Well, like both of you have been saying, it's that thing of, you know, I think it's twofold of, it's so much more cost-effective to, yeah, even if, it, you know, I think there have been reports all the time of like how much it costs to rent out space for the E3 show floor. But even if those prices are significantly down, if the companies can just focus on their own show and get their own spotlight, a lot of them, I think, have realized, well, why would I want to share the space when I don't have to? You know, there are, I think, reasons to have it all together. And I think one of the biggest things you're both talking about is the excitement of it all. You know, we've had a lot of chats about E3 on the show, especially as Sony has left it over the years and whatnot. And like, there's such a, I have such a mixed feeling about it, because for so long before I started working in the industry, it was, man, I can't wait to go to E3. That is the goal, is to go to an E3 and to attend. It has been wonderful, but the last couple of years, you could start to see this slow sort of like ebbing away of what we knew as E3, and this confusion of what E3 wanted to be. And so I think like it needs to figure that out whenever, whatever form it comes back in. But yeah, like in terms of partnerships and studios wanting to do stuff, you know, they all are putting on these shows. I will say the thing that I do miss more than anything is knowing when it was all going to happen. There was something nice to E3 being a week of work together, both on our side of covering everything, but also of knowing I'm going to get all of the announcements here. Where it is, like right now, we have no idea when anything happens. It's all just whenever they feel like it. And I, you know, to a certain extent, I do think it's good, because everyone was arbitrarily hitting this June date where they needed to have a demo or trailers that maybe they weren't ready to show things, but things had to happen. And so teams can have the pace that they need right now. And I do think that's better, but it was also nice in terms of a celebration of games, knowing when we'll be able to cover those things of like having this, North Star of the year to be like, that's when it's all going to happen was really exciting. Whereas now it's like, I wake up every day. Oh, there's a new announcement for a thing. Is it a thing that needs to be a thing? Mm-hmm, I think, right. You know,
are you telling me you're not a fan of a week before? Hey, there's a state of play in 3 days or like,
you have 24 hours.
Exactly.
It's that thing. It's like, it's exciting, but it's also
absolutely
really hard to then plan work.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
And there's also like a, like, you know, let's not even just talk about the Jeff element in the room in terms of ESA, but other companies going out and doing their own thing. Like, we keep on seeing PlayStation, like trademark PlayStation Experience, PSX. And I'm like, okay, when is that happening? Bring it back. Like, I think, you know, things like Summer Games Fest for Xbox. I know, you know, some of my Xbox buddies are so excited to meet up with each other, whether it be in Toronto or whether it be in LA. It to me, it's like, why not just have your own event? You're not dictated what time slot you're there or not, mm-hmm. and you have the freedom to put on the show that you truly want to do with no hindrance. That's really the biggest obstacle for the ESA. It just feels like from the outside looking in, there is too much bureaucracy going on there.
It's a big question, I think, because we see these companies do it on their own, and then they're like, yeah, I'm going to stick with that. I do think, I've said on the show before, I think Nintendo deciding, yeah, we're going to do digital showcases. We're not going to, you know, it's still going to be the week of E3, but we're going to move to doing a digital thing and we're not going to be there, I think was the first step in this complete change that we've just seen ramp up and be accelerated by the pandemic and everything, where all these companies are just doing their own thing. But like, Joseph, to your point, yeah, PlayStation has PSX. We know they can do an in-person thing if they want to. I really want them to because I never got to go and I only hear awesome things about it.
Oh, Jonathan, it's amazing.
I've heard
such good
stuff.
I was at the last one. It was so good.
I moved to, I think, SF right after the last one or the year the last one was happening, but wasn't able to go that year. And then I was like, I'll go to the next one. And then it didn't happen. But I think with PlayStation in particular, at least from my perspective, I think even if E3 does return, I don't think PlayStation comes back. I don't think they dropped out before E3 dropped out of being E3. Like they dropped out the year before.
They did it before it was cool.
Exactly. As Altano joked, I think last week on the show or the week before, of like, they had one bad E3 showcase. They had like banger after banger after banger of great years.
Let's cool down with that word, but I appreciate it.
So
I wanted to work it in. But they had like an incredible run for several years. And then they had one weird show that everyone was like, that was really weird. Why did they do it that way? And then they were just like, we're never doing it again. We're leaving now. Goodbye. And that, like, it was such a weird about face, but I do think it was like, they did that. And now they've been doing state of plays and showcases. And to your point, like, this PSX exists out there in the ether and could return someday. But even if it doesn't, like, they've shown this pattern. We now know, other than in the console year, like, they'll do state of plays. They seem to do a showcase in September. We'll get single game state of plays before big releases from first parties. That's just kind of their cadence now. And I think there's room for improvement, but that just seems to be what they're going to be doing going forward. But Kyle, do you feel any differently? Do you think there's a chance they go back? Do you think they're just going to keep going forward this way?
I so hope they go back to PlayStation Experience. E3, whatever. But I don't think they need to, though. I think it's the point you're making is everyone, when a state of play is announced, everyone makes sure that they're free, right? That night is booked, or whenever the time is that it's on, you know that they're going to come to watch it because they're going to see some cool new PlayStation news. So like, they have that cornered, the excitement down. And I don't think they do need to go back. I don't think E3 is... I don't think PlayStation needs E3. E3 needs PlayStation. And I don't think they're ever going to go back.
That's fair. Joseph, what about you?
Yeah. No. I think that bridge was burned long ago. And yeah, I feel the same for everyone. Like, I'm like, none of y'all really need E3. I think it kind of, you know, having that 1 week is great and all, but there's so much you miss because it's just 1 week. You know, There's so much that you know, I'm so happy that we're not having the conversations anymore of like, who wins E3? It's like, and then like the cheesy, like, everybody wins. It's like, it's because they're all gamers. And so like, you know, for me, I like that we're not having those conversations, which is great. And there's things that we're not missing, but there is a thing that we do miss with those heartfelt moments. Like, one of the best moments of all E3 was at a Ubisoft showcase where you saw the, you know, one of the developers straight up weep because he saw his game, you know, you know, Mario, was it Mario Kingdom?
Mario and Rabbids.
Shown off, and like Miyamoto giving it the thumbs up. And you miss those human moments that I think that's why those conferences leave such an impact on everybody. And yeah, sure, you may get like, you know, Nathan Drake is stuck in a wall, but that's a trade-off I'm willing to have for that human moment where we get to humanize the developers that we revere their product so much.
And I mean, Kojima walking down the lighted walkway at E3, like, that
Michael
one year.
Jackson walkway.
Yeah. And then his first words are, "I'm back." Oh my God. Iconic.
And then when, I think that year was also the year they announced like the Crash Bandicoot Insane trilogy for people.
That was
like
Spider-Man and everything unveiled.
You're totally right. There is a human element, and I think there are ways to weave that in. I think that is one of the biggest problems the state of plays have right now, is the lack of humanity, where it's like, at least Nintendo Directs, like, you get the Nintendo exec standing there for 2 minutes total of screen time, but they're there in between to let you know about things, or you'll see a dev for 30 seconds be like, "We're very excited to hear more," or they'll, you know, throw to Aonuma to be like, "Breath of the Wild 2 is going to be another year away. Sorry." Like, they'll at least
they'll put the Splatoon
them.
Guy in the lab coat.
Exactly.
With the dualies. I'm like, this guy, he gets like, it.
They'll do that for a bit. You know, Xbox is still primarily doing live show sort of showcases. They moved away from Inside Xbox, which was sort of their attempt at Directs, but I don't think ever quite succeeded, because they were usually like hour and a half long live shows that didn't need to be hour and a half. And but then the State of Play, I think, learned and pivoted too much in the opposite direction from Inside Xbox. And it was like, it's so clinical, and it's so, here is a voice that you don't know who it belongs to, and they're talking, and maybe like once in a showcase, someone will show up. You know, in the last State of Play, like Ben McCaw from Guerrilla, who's been on Beyond, is a wonderful person to talk to, showed up for 30 seconds to talk about Beyond. I was like, or to talk about Horizon. I was like, that's great. A person. Yes. Yeah. Show me more of them. Mm-hmm. You know, I think adding that back in, even if it is just, I don't know his schedule. He's probably pretty busy. But I think like having Herman come out at the beginning of a State of Play and be like, "We're so excited to show you what we have going on. Here's a look at our third parties." And then, you know, 20 minutes later, "And here's a really cool first party." Like, just have him on there for 30 seconds at a time, to, you know, 5 minutes out of his day, I think goes a long way for people. I don't know, you know, to that human connection.
And that's like the best part of those State of Plays, is like when they're dedicated to a game. Again, it's seeing the developer out there talk about it in not a clinical way, more personable. Of course, it's going to be PR and marketed specifically to get the tone of messaging across, but it's them. And you're right, like with Herman, it's like the man's a dreamboat, but he can also sell me a thing just so easily. Like he's so cool, calm, and collective. I think the one thing that we miss as PlayStation fans is, you know, bring Shu out there. Everybody loves him. He's just, his smile lights up a room. Like, have that person talk to us and sell us on that PlayStation ecosystem is really what I want to see from
them. Yeah, you're totally right. I miss the days of Adam Boys coming out and unveiling Final Fantasy VII Remake, or Gio Corsi championing the Vita on stage. Like, those moments are sorely missing. And you're right, it's just a disembodied voice. Like, and up next, a look at this exciting new shooter coming for our studio, whatever it is. Like, it just becomes like background noise.
No, totally. And it's one of those things where, like, we do have a template for it. Like, you know, Joseph, to your point with Shuhei, he was at Summer Game Fest last year. Like, he called in for a video thing, conferenced in, and that still works, though. Like, he you know, to show off, I think it was Salt and Sacrifice and maybe one other game. But he was there to do that, and that was great. Like, I'd love if before, you know, there was that great run of indies in the last State of Play where it was like Stray and Rollerdrome and Season and all that. It would be so great if they just inserted 30 seconds of Shu being like, hey, we have so much awesome stuff coming. Here's a look at the next couple months of indies on PlayStation. And then you go from there. And yeah, like to your point, Herman showing up for a few minutes, I think you both nailed it. Like, PlayStation fans do like to associate someone on stage with PlayStation. Right or wrong, having that human element there so connects you. And not everyone is cut out for that. Not every gaming executive is designed to be that as a human being, and that's okay. But I do feel like they need a little bit more of that right now to really bridge the gap.
Absolutely. That being said, though, last state of play, fantastic.
So
very good. Very good.
I'm still riding that high of just like, same. Man, that was just 30 minutes of nonstop goodness.
Ryan yelling into the mic about Resident Evil filled my soul with joy.
It was so one of the funniest, the only thought that I've had lingering since then, I was like, do we talk about the state of play more on this episode, or are we just rehashing? I think for me, the one thing is just like, man, it's going to be hard for the next state of plays to live up to that, though.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's just so much. Like, for me, go for it.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think the only thing that could, if I was on PlayStation side, is I wouldn't follow up that a state of play with another state of play. I'd follow it up with the showcase.
Yeah.
Go first party. Because I think you're right. I don't think another state of play is going to do better than this past one in terms of just how exciting it is.
Or like so a different one. And, like maybe a deep dive into a game that we're all really excited about.
Maybe a cataclysmic event that is supposedly coming.
An adventure about a father and a son.
Bonding
over the apocalypse.
I have no idea what you guys are talking. Yes. Nothing comes to mind. I don't know what that could be.
We're calm or reasonable people.
But no, I like, yeah, to me, I think totally the next way to go is a God of War state of play, the PlayStation showcase. Like, I think kind of you're both right. I think it needs to be those two next, and then maybe one other state of play like later on. But I think, I think it needs to be messaging it so clearly from here on out. Like, there needs, I'm okay if there are smaller state of plays. Like, I do think the one before this that was like, we're going to mostly be focused on our Japanese, you know, partners. That's a very good specific way to do it. I think, you know, do a state of play that is just going to be indies. Do a state of play that's just going to be PSVR 2, but don't leave the wiggle room for people. I think that's the problem, is that if there's any wiggle room, everyone will hold on to that.
Absolutely. And that's when you get to kind of surprise people as well. Maybe a little lie here or there. Cause like we saw Returnal and my God, it's so good. It's so beautiful. You know,
not
like
a Japanese partner. Yeah.
Not at all. But like, you're like, oh, you're here. You know, you get Spider-Man on PC. That's fantastic. Get to play it on my Steam Deck. Like they still get to surprise you while setting the expectations, which I feel like they have been doing pretty well for the last state of play or two.
It's definitely been improving.
Keep that. Yeah.
I think they need to continue to do that. I think especially as the PlayStation focus diversifies, you know, as we're going to get into a very VR focused era, a multiplayer focused era, they're moving into PC and mobile more. I think they've got to like start to draw those lines even more of like, hey, once a year, we're going to have a VR focused state of play. Once a year, we're going to do a PC and mobile focused, or and like they can sprinkle stuff in as surprises, like you're saying, but I think they need to get those expectations there so that people don't say, what could God of War show up here? Maybe, you know?
Yeah.
I think
I would love for them to have their own branded, like state of indies show.
Yeah.
Similar to like an indie direct. Cause I mean, we talk about it a lot on the Trophy Room, and my other podcast, the IndieCast, where like PlayStation indies aren't really gelling all that well. Like on the outside, on the surface, they do showcase indies, like in the last state of play. There was that huge block of 4 or 5. But every time you hear from an indie dev, or I was at PAX and asking about, like, oh, what about PlayStation? And the word is always that they're notoriously hard to get in touch with and to work with. And they need to change that view and, like, yeah, do a 30-minute, 20-minute thing of just all these really cool indie games with Shuhei heading that state of play. I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah,
and also, if I could just add one last thing too, is like, it has been 2,633 days since of recording that Bloodborne's been out. Put respect on it, you know. I'll take a PC release. I'll take a remake. I'll take a remaster. I'll take anything, and I'll pay full price, double price.
I am going to say banger so much for the rest of the show.
You know what? I will allow it. I will start saying it if Bloodborne, I see it somehow, some way.
I'll hold you to that. But no, I totally think
one rule.
I totally think you're both right. And Kyle, like, Nintendo has shown they can do it with the Nindies, and people will tune in for those still. I think PlayStation can do that better than they have been. I do think, like, you know, hey, we're showing 5 new indies on the PlayStation blog doesn't quite have the same pull as we're doing a live show for 20 minutes here at all. Mm-hmm. Even if it's short, even if it is just 5 games and here's a 12-minute show, at least it's something that I think builds hype around it. And those are, like you said, even this recent spate that we're looking at, those are all really cool looking, very different games, like Stray, Rollerdrome, Season and Tunic, all back to back, is a phenomenal indie lineup. Like, oh my god, what a great 4 months. That should be a like shout from the rooftops of how cool indies are on PlayStation right now. But
if they're going to follow the Stray thing and it coming to like the extra and premium tier of PS Plus, that's excellent. Every month you get a cool indie, I'd be so down for that.
It'd be very cool. But at least for the future, we don't quite know what PlayStation will be doing. It is always a mystery that we'll wake up 2 days before to find out, but probably safe bet that they won't be at the next E3 if E3 does happen. But at the very least, here's hoping for a showcase in 3 months, is it, I guess? Here's hoping. Anyway, other than that, just briefly wanted to mention for people wondering, obviously it's a continued thing that we're keeping an eye on. You know, PlayStation stock and availability continues to be a big question. We've heard promises that this will be a thing we could potentially see more of in the next year, that they're going to ramp up production. Stock has been apparently bouncing back recently. GamesIndustry.biz had a great report recently sort of about PlayStation jumping up the charts. You know, it's currently third place in the UK in terms of sales for the year, but that May was its best month yet. It's continuing to have more availability. I think just recently on the sales charts they were reporting in this last week, Horizon Forbidden West was back at the top. Because the people can buy it and play it on PS5. So there is hope that you'll be able to get a PS5 in the months to come. And we just want people to, because we want to talk about PS5, the games, more. So hopefully that continues to happen.
Absolutely.
And then just also on that, we forgot to mention last week because we were in the middle of a live show of Insanity, but the new PlayStation Plus games are available for the month at the what will become the essential tier in a week for North America, and that is God of War, Naruto to Boruto Shinobi Striker, and Nickelodeon All-Stars Brawl, which just got voice acting in it as well.
Hey!
That's the lineup for the base PlayStation Plus games. As a reminder, of course, the new PS Plus, whatever tier you're subscribing to, changes over next Monday, June 13th. So that is going to bring with it, hopefully, this full 700-plus game library. We still don't know what that full library is. As it's rolled out to new territories, more games have been added sort of territory by territory, but it's still a mystery of what the full lineup will be. We don't know. I'm excited. I'm hopeful more old stuff gets trophies. I think that's rad. I hope more Resistance games get added so you can play the full
trilogy.
but we're all really excited. I assume you guys are you know, interested to check out what the full lineup's going to be, and we'll probably be talking about it next week as well.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a big moment, and I hope it's cool and good and just the start.
And like, if Ratchet and Clank Up Your Arsenal gets trophy support, then that's a perfect game.
There you go. Oh man, if those old Ratchets get trophy, I mean, some of them do have it because of the PS3. Mm-hmm. Trilogy. So if they just make those playable that way, but like the base PS2 version, so I don't have to stream them, that would be ideal.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. Yeah, the PS3 streaming stuff is like out of sight, out of mind. Like, I've been actually tempted to go purchase a PS3 and just get like the Metal Gear collection, but like, for me, it's just like, I'm looking at the PS2, I'm like, all right, Ratchet and Clank, that's time to revisit you, old friend.
Man, I hope so. We'll know more about that next week and be talking about it when we have all the information and actually can play those games. And speaking about Bend, I am very excited to finally play Siphon Filter for the first time with Phillips.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
Jonathan. I can't wait. I can't wait to get past the second level, because when I was a kid, all we had at my grandma's house was a demo disc of Siphon Filter. So we always got to like the first, at the end of level 2, and they're like, my grandma's like, how much are games? $60? You know, this is the 90s, right?
Yeah.
That's very much like me. Yeah, it's very much like me, where I would have to rent the console from Blockbuster. For like 2 days, but it didn't come with a memory card. So I very clearly remember playing the opening of Crash Bandicoot millions of times.
Oh, man.
Those 2 days.
Man. Yeah. No longer. Well, now you'll be able to do that via PS Plus game trials.
Yeah.
And you can play the first couple hours of games. But yeah, excited to talk about all that next week. We're running a little short on time, so I do want to jump in to make sure I give you both time for some memory card stories, because you're both on the show. And Joseph, you sort of gave a little bit of one at the start, so I'm going to start with Kyle. But of course, for those out there, Memory Card is our weekly segment where you and the cast as well sometimes give their stories of their PlayStation gaming life. They can be happy, sad, weird, wacky, whatever that you want them to be. I love reading these. So many of you have written in with great ones. We're going to continue to read them each week on the show. But if you'd like to write in with yours and you haven't already, please write in to beyond@ign.com. And if you're someone who's maybe tuned in recently but tuned out for a bit, newsflash, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, the email wasn't working for me for a while. So if you sent it, you know, in the year of our shoe 2021, I didn't get it. So please send it again.
Right.
Anyway, Kyle, is there any PlayStation memory, story, anything you want to share with us?
Yeah. So I very distinctly remember I think it was Final Fantasy VIII I was playing, which is one of my favorites. I'll take whatever flack Eddie you want to throw at me. And I was playing in what we call in our house the toy room, which was basically just like hanging out and watch TV, play games, or whatever. And I was playing a game, and I think my mom was yelling at me, like, "Oh, Kyle, you go do the dishwasher, please. Like, it's done. Pause the game and go." And I was clearly just in the mode. I was like, "Yeah, sure, whatever." And I just kept playing. Little did I know, because it never happened before, after about maybe 20, 25 minutes of continuing to play and ignoring my mom's wishes, she came in and turned the light switch off. I was like, "Oh, that's weird." But then I totally forgot that it was the light switch controls the power cord to the TV and the PlayStation. And again, that was back in the days with a memory card. I didn't save. I lost hours of progress.
Oh, my God.
I learned my lesson. You get up the first time and do whatever chore. So that's a very clear thing in my mind. And now whenever I worked with kids for a very long time, and I would tell them that story, like, that's a memory card? It's not inside the system already?
Yeah,
no, that was an extra purchase. And
we had
the whole thing. You had stickers that you put on to write your name, so that way you knew which one was which.
You would get the cool third-party see-through ones if you wanted.
Shout
out to Mad Cats.
Oh yeah, so much of our money back then and none of it now.
Such a small, like, a what is a huge part of gaming history.
Oh yeah,
just gone.
It's weird. It's bizarre.
It's very weird. Yeah,
yeah.
Unless you're the Vita and you have to spend a lot of money for those.
Oh yeah. Well. That is absolutely crushing. Did you? I assume you eventually went back and replayed.
Oh, eventually, but it hurt.
Yeah,
it hurt.
That is so tough. But I appreciate you sharing that pain with us.
Yes.
But no, thank you. I have had many. I forgot to save, or for me it was a lot of less memory card related ones and more handhelds where I'd leave it on, and then forget that I left it on, and then it would die. And I'd lose hours of... I stopped many Pokemon games because I'd lose like 10 hours of progress because I forgot to charge it.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I know that paid very well. But thank you. Thank you for sharing that one with us. Joseph, do you want to share any before we wrap up?
Just one comment about Mad Cats controllers. That's where my memory card slot's going to be right here, right now. Because you always, like, nowadays you're like, you know, you're like the third wheel to your friend group when it's like, "Oh, this game only has 4 players, but sorry." We're like, "Oh, Destiny's only 3 players." I'm like, "Sorry, man. This is, you know, go watch a Star Wars." Where to me, it was, you got the Mad Cats controller, just like the one on screen, where like one analog stick shorter than the other.
Yep.
You know, it's
the
a PlayStation.
The buttons are very sticky.
Yeah, for no, like, it's like, was this used? No, brand new. It has like A, B, X, Y, and it's like, this is a PlayStation controller. You know this, right?
A turbo button that I don't think I ever figured out.
Nobody figured it out.
No. Exactly.
It's gaming's last great mystery.
Last great mystery. And to me, one of the one of the best controllers ever made was not made by PlayStation, was not made by Xbox. It was made by Logitech. And I want someone to call out in the comments what this controller was. It was the PS2 wireless controller. I remember my friend giving me that controller. He's like, this is not the Mad Cats controller. You're in the circle. Trust me, this one's wireless. And I felt it, and it was like I felt real level. Like, I was just like, this, my hand is just forming perfectly on this controller. So shout out to you, Logitech. Shout out to you, Connor, for showing me the light that was Logitech PS2 wireless controller.
I don't think I've ever used a Logitech controller.
It kind of looked like, and this is why, like, when the PS3 came out, like the boomerang controller, they're like, this is just a prototype. Yeah. I was so upset when that they didn't follow through. I feel like that's the biggest failure.
I think you were the only one.
Because I'm just like, yes, this looks like the Logitech one. This one, that's it's real level. This is great.
Things would have been real different if that was the official DualShock.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
they
yeah.
They would have moved to the new DualShock, like, even faster than they did for the 6-axis.
Absolutely.
I feel like just the console war would be over, PlayStation 1.
Yep, that's all we need. That was the thing that we all missed. Though you speaking of, I did just want to, that briefly brought to mind, I did think of wireless controllers. The first time I ever held a WaveBird, I was like, I don't need a cord for this. It's free, and it moves, and it feels great. It was like life-changing, and now it's just the standard. Now it's like, I need to use a wired controller? Why?
I remember my one friend in middle school or elementary brought in a WaveBird, and he was just like, look, I imported it from Japan. And we're like, what?
Amazing.
This is like the height of technology's there.
The days when, like, you would hear about a thing a year later, because that was the time we had to wait.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you both for sharing those memory card stories with us. Again, if you want to share one at home, you can write in to beyond@ign.com with the subject line memory card, and we'll read them on the show every week we can. But that is going to pretty much wrap us up for this week's episode. Very quickly before we go, obviously just want to, again, thank you both so much. Where can people find you on Twitter? Joseph, we'll start with you.
Yeah, you can find me over at Mr. Badbit. You can find the show over at PS Trophy Room on Twitter, or you can find the podcast wherever you find your podcast service of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. We even have the video version of the show at The Trophy Room, a PlayStation podcast. Again, each and every Thursday, me and my best friend Kyle talk about the latest, the greatest in all things PlayStation, and we got so much to talk about the past few weeks, so definitely tune on in if you liked hearing our voices, you want to hear more of this sultry tone, which I don't see why not. You know, I feel like we crushed this episode.
Yeah, you guys have been
a banger of a time.
Yeah, absolute banger.
All right, Kyle. All right, enough. This is actually the last episode of the Trophy Room.
But weirdly, it happened to Beyond, but this is somehow the last episode of your guys.
The last.
Yeah, that's how it works. Beyond can somehow cancel you guys, but you can cancel us. It's very strange. Oh, I don't understand it.
What a power dynamic.
But weirdly, we both can cancel PS I Love You.
Fair enough.
That's just how it happens. Kyle, where can people find you, and what else do you want to?
Yeah, you can find me at Mr. Ksef on Twitter and pretty much everywhere. If you want to check out what's coming on the indie game front, I co-founded a site called 61indie.com. That's SIXONEINDIE. We do a 61 IndieCast every single week where we deep dive into the indie games. And we're partnering with our friends at Point in Progress for what we're titling Hot Game Summer, where we're live reacting to all the showcases, including next Saturday. There's like 4 indie showcases that we're live streaming on twitch.tv/61indie. And yeah, go check them out. Indie games rule. More people should play them.
So we talked a lot about showcases and what were some of the good ones. 6-1 did one of the best showcases, not just for indies, but just ever. So
yeah, we put on our own showcase, 20 minutes of unannounced indie games. You can go check that out on the 6-1 Indie YouTube channel.
Yeah, y'all did a great job with that showcase and continue to do awesome coverage of indies. You're right, they are rad and people should play them. And you guys do a great job of highlighting
them. Thank you very much.
But yeah, I had something else I was going to say and now I completely forgot. So that's just me. All I'm going to say is, I have nothing to plug because it's just been a busy time other than, you know, all the state of plays and the live shows and all that stuff we're doing. Please stay tuned to IGN for all of that amazing stuff throughout the summer of gaming. But also, if you're into Art of the Level, I should have some cool ones coming up in the coming weeks. So look forward to those. And if you haven't watched my past ones, please go check them out. They're on IGN YouTube. Ghost of Tsushima, Last of Us Part 2, Uncharted 4. really, really great, wonderful insight from the devs who made those games and a lot of cool stuff. But other than that, Joseph and Kyle, thank you so much for joining me. This was a blast, a banger of an episode. And
slanger, really... some would say.
Nope. Yes. Nope. No one says that.
I heard it once. But yeah, it has been a joy to have you both on. I'm really, really glad we can make this happen. Please come back sometime.
Anytime, Jonathan. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, as always, to Red, our producer, for making the show happen behind the scenes. And thank you to everyone out there for listening and watching. We hope you're doing well. We hope you're staying safe. We hope you're enjoying this summer game extravaganza of excitement. And we'll be back next week. But as always, beyond.
Beyond.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.